I just hope that, you know, when you think systemically, we really need to think about how do they keep people out? We need to think about how we can bring people in. And with women, what we're hearing is they need flexibility. That's not just in public office, but that's in corporate life. That's working in a variety of ways. How can we be more flexible?
Welcome to Vital Connections On Air, a podcast brought to you by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality, where we explore the topics and issues important to leaders across Minnesota. Today, I am excited to be joined by Teresa Kittredge, the founder and executive director of 100 Rural Women. Thank you so much for joining me today, Teresa.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.
I had the great pleasure of getting to know Teresa in an airport in, was it South Carolina?
Yes.
Right after we attended the Summit for Rural Women. And it was just such a lovely time, I think 3 years ago almost already, that we got to connect. And at that point in time, you told me about this dream that you had of starting an organization called 100 Rural Women. And congratulations, in the height of the pandemic, you launched your program and got started.
Yes, it's been quite a ride, quite an interesting way to navigate. So
yes, absolutely. So why don't you tell all of our listeners exactly what 100 Rural Women is and what motivated you to start this great organization?
Yes, well, thanks, Christy, and so happy to be here and be able to share about our work. And 100 Rural Women is, you know, our main goal in life is to figure out how we can better connect rural women and inspire leadership. The way we really came together was since I was a kid, I was born in Worthington, grew up in southwestern Minnesota. It just always bothered me, and it always was just front and center for me that women were, you know, doing the work, putting everything together, but they were never in decision-making roles. There weren't enough of them in decision-making roles. I spent 20 years working in the legislature, same thing. Worked nationally, same thing. So it always was an interest of mine and a nagging issue of how do we get more women? How do we have more representation, more gender equity, having more women in leadership? So really the way 100 Rural Women came together was, you know, during the 2016 election, I was sort of taken back and really thinking about the way women were being discussed and dismissed and the way rural America was being painted with this broad brush. And I kept thinking, that is not the rural America I know. And it was really a point in time where I thought, you know, we need women, we need rural women to better support each other. We need to figure out how we can have more women leading, more women engaged, more women in decision-making leadership roles across all sectors. So that's how 100 Rural Women came together. I picked up the name, I left it at the Secretary of State's office. And I thought, I'm either going to build this with the national organization I was working with, or I'm gonna come home and build it in Minnesota. And long story short, that's what I did. I ended up in 2019, I pulled a group of women together and talked about my idea, my business concept. It was not a brainchild idea, nothing brand new, earth shattering. It was like, how can we get rural women to better support each other and better encourage each other and learn how to, you know, what are those pathways to leadership? So that's how we all came together. And as Christy shared, I, you know, put a board together, got all our processes together, got ready to move forward as an organization. And we were starting to, you know, identify what our first programs of work would be, going out for funding. And our formal launch was going to be in March of 2020. And we all know what happened then. COVID hit and we just had to step back and rethink our whole business model. But it's been a great experience. And like any startup organization, every 3 months during COVID, it was like, well, this is still going. How are we going to best serve women? So that's what we did.
That is great. And I'm so glad that you did bring this idea back home and launched it here in Minnesota. And it's been just really interesting to watch and be a part of some of the programs that 100 Rural Women have offered. And one of kind of the key, I don't know if you would call it a cornerstone, Teresa, but something that really excited me that you did, that I had the opportunity to participate in, were your conversations. I believe you did. Did you do 100 conversations?
We are across halfway. The state? Yeah, we're halfway through. That was going to be my initial work, was 100 meetings across the state in 100 days, 100 ideas. And with COVID, that all just got turned on its head. So we threw our first 50 and now we're just launched our next 50. We just launched that this week.
Okay, great. And in those first 50 conversations that you had, they were virtual. And I mean, it was so powerful to see the number of women that came together to talk and discuss what they were experiencing, how they were leading in their communities. What were some of the takeaways that you gathered through that process?
Oh, great question. We were really fortunate. You know, when COVID hit, it was like, oh my gosh, we have no money. We have no resources. How are we going to get this organization up and going? And I have a couple of really sharp young women on my board. And we're like, we could do webinars and can lift up women. And how are we going to do these 100 meetings across the state? So I just had to really rethink of how do we do that? And luckily, the University of Minnesota was interested in that. The Northwest region, the Regional Sustainable Development Partnership, gave us $1 to support our graduate students. So that's how, with these 100 meetings, I was really fortunate to be able to work through CURA, the Center for Regional Affairs. And we've had 2 graduate students who have helped us, you know, really lay out these meetings, do the research, and roll up the findings. So I think probably the major takeaways, you know, we did a survey and we did convenings. COVID really raised the issue of how women are disproportionately impacted with responsibility and limited time, and being able to connect virtually, we found, was a huge bonus for women. And it's not something we would have done in the beginning. I would have been out there in person. I'm a total extrovert. You know, what are you thinking? What are you doing? And it was really about what are the barriers to leadership? How have you overcome them? What kind of supports would you like? What networks are you involved in? You know, maybe you don't want to be in a big leadership position, but maybe your neighbor does. What can you do to help her? So really it was, how do we best connect as women? How do we lift each other up? How do we, when a woman is in a leadership role or leading in your community or doing something that, you know, they're really stepping up and doing something, how can you lift that woman up and publicly thank her for what she's doing and support her? Where do we find opportunities for women to practice leadership? Because it can be overwhelming and it can be hard to figure out what are those pathways to leadership. So we really heard from women, what are those different leadership roles? How can I get involved? And do I have the skills that I need in order to go after some of this? And it's like, yes, 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 you do. We all have amazing skills to bring to the table. And it's across all sectors. And I'll just use an example on the public service side, on the political side. Research shows it takes 7 to 9 times to ask a woman to run for office before she'll even consider it. Women traditionally,
seven to nine times just to be asked to consider, before they'll run?
Right. Oh right. My women goodness. Need to be asked. And this is general. This is, you know, a general finding, but in research, women feel that they need to really be well prepared and know all the issues and know all the nuts and bolts before they would run for office. Where generally, when you look at men, they're like, oh yeah, I could do that. So it's getting women to realize they bring many skills and assets to the table, and getting women to realize that, no, you've got it. Go for it. You can learn when you get there. You know, you have a lot of things to bring to the table. So it's really building women's confidence. Women need leadership confidence. So those are probably the biggest takeaways. You know, we had a number of takeaways, and we do have a research report out on our website, and we're going to be coming out in June with a big report on all 50 or the next 50 too. So we'll have the whole 100.
Great. And we'll make sure that on our show notes that we link to that report that's
wonderful.
Currently on your website to make sure that great information is shared. You know, I think it's so interesting that you brought up the confidence piece. I remember visiting with a woman who was a city council member, and, you know, we were just talking about, you know, her path towards leadership. And I asked, what's one piece of advice that you would share with any other woman coming up through the ranks? And her answer really surprised me, because it was, be prepared to lose, and how that impacts just your, how you think about yourself, how other people think about you. And I really think that speaks to that confidence piece, right? That it's not just that you can do the job, but that you feel like others think you can do the job.
Yeah, no, that's a really good example. And just to stay on that public sector side, public service side, we just launched a new series called Ask a Leading Woman. And it's really from the first 50 meetings, you know, we were going to do 100 meetings, and we got through the first 50, and I was like, well, we have so much data, we're swimming in it. So let's take what we learned in these first 50 and grab those themes to see what's really going to help. And one of them is, we want to know how women are in different leadership journeys and how they got there and what they overcame and how they navigated and what is the pathway to that position. And so we do have Rita Albright, who's the former mayor of Bemidji. And I think she's really going to be interesting, because she's done a variety of things in her life, but she ran for the state Senate last time around, and the social media bullying and some of those things mm-hmm. that, and, you know, Rita doesn't have little children now, but when you look at young parents with young children, women who are on school boards right now through COVID, all those pieces, it's not just the candidate sometimes, and this is goes across all political offices, but it's your whole family, you know, can be a target. Right. So how do you prepare for that? And how do you do that? So it's all those pieces of not only getting there, but once you're, you know, running, what does that mean? And losing, or gosh, if you win, then what do you do? How do you not end up being isolated? And where do you find those support networks to help you and help people show, I've been through this, these are some strategies I used. That's the whole idea of this. And we also are very fortunate, just staying on the elected side, we were selected as a capstone project with the Humphrey School. And we have three students right now and three incredible young women interviewing elected women right now to talk about, what was it like to run? Why did you decide to run? What were the barriers? What supports would you have liked to have? Mm-hmm. And how did you deal with things? And once you got in office, what would be nice to have? So that is something we're looking at. We want to build a network of 100 rural elected women to mentor. It's a mentorship network. It's really all about mentoring. How do we mentor women, another 100 rural women, to seek public service? So that's what it's all about. We are a big blob of mentorship, because it is. Everything we do is coming to mentorship. So that's like the grand takeaway is we need to mentor each other in around ages, around sectors, around culture, around race, so we better understand each other, all those pieces. So it really is, mentorship is our overarching takeaway.
That is so important, because there just aren't many stories out there right now about the things that women in elected positions go through, both in that run as well as while they're actually in office. So I look forward to hearing more about that work mm-hmm. too. With the mentoring piece, mm-hmm. Are you hearing from people that those connections, the relationships, really help to support their emotional and mental well-being? Is that kind of a key aspect of this as well?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because as I'm talking about the key takeaways, one of the top key takeaways was mental health and wellness, because that is a huge part of what we heard from women and how COVID, you know, even pushed that further with isolation mm-hmm. and additional responsibility. So that is what we're hearing in mentorship. It's like, how do I navigate some of this? And what are other people doing? And what are those strategies? So it's really sharing. And it's not necessarily old woman to young woman. It's across the board. We all have different ways we can mentor. And that whole piece of just having somebody to talk to and somebody who's been through this, it just sort of eases the pressure sometimes. So we are working in the background too of this mentorship network that will be more of a general mentorship network, but almost like matchmaking. You know, I have these certain skills. I've been through this and this, and you have somebody who's looking for help in a certain area. We're trying to figure out how to connect those women. Probably my biggest frustration with this work is I meet incredible women every week. And I'm like, how do we connect these women? And I meet somebody, oh, you need to meet somebody, because oh my gosh, that would be great. So that's my biggest frustration, is there's just so much opportunity. And we just have to figure out that human capacity that we can pull it all together and figure out how to build structures and strategies to connect women. And mental health and wellness is a huge piece of that, because it is just finding somebody who's been through it, or somebody who's got experience in something that can help give you some strategies they use to see if they would work for you. That's a big piece of it.
How would you say, are you seeing a lot of women coming out to your events? Would you say that women in Minnesota, rural women in Minnesota, are craving these connections?
Absolutely. I think that was another takeaway personally for me, because it was scary. It was, you know, I had it all planned. Oh, I was going to start in Laverne. I just had this whole plan of in-person meetings. And this is really our market research. And because I think I know what women need, rural women need, because I'm a rural woman. I don't. I wanted to hear from women. What do you need? What would help you? You know, how do you navigate this? And then when COVID hit, you know, we just had to think, okay, well, I guess we're going to do this virtually. So we were really lucky. We piloted some virtual meetings in the Northwest, and oh my gosh, people came and they were interested and they wanted to be connected. And then in that pilot, it was just sort of those 15 counties in the Northwest part of the state. It was just so apparent that women were craving to connect. And COVID just threw an extra layer on, as I mentioned, isolation, so much responsibility. Mm-hmm. But we heard over and over again, and I just heard it again yesterday from a convening we did. I don't have time for this. I wasn't going to come. Oh my God, I'm so glad I came. Because mm-hmm. people were making connections. And that's what it's all about, is trying to figure out, how do we connect? How do we support each other? How do we learn more about each other? You know, it's a very divisive time, as we all mm-hmm. know. And when 100 rural women came together, it was so politically divisive. And in small communities, and I've served on school board, I was chair of the school board. I serve on a hospital board in Big Fork. We're a taxation district, so we're elected on the ballot. And, you know, it used to be in the old days, you'd walk in and hang your political hat at the door. We all have some kind of politics, but then you go in and do the work. That's changing. People mm-hmm. are bringing a lot of their politics into yeah. local. And this is a generalization again, but generally, well, right now, of course, we're very hierarchical in many communities. And generally, men have always operated in more of a hierarchy, and women are more collaborative. And my view on all this, all these crazy years of careers I've had, we need more collaborative leadership. And that's why I really think it's important to have more women engaged. And women lead everywhere, but in decision-making roles. Decision-making mm-hmm. roles that have impact on policy, on investments, on, you know, what happens in our community. That's a really key piece. And that's what we heard from women, was like, well, I'd like to get involved. I don't really know how to. It's like, how do we demystify those paths to leadership? How do we know mm-hmm. women, let women know, if you do this, there's going to be people there to support you. When you have things happening, like a campaign, or you're running a business and something happens, you know, there's a network, you can build networks of women to support you. And so that's a piece that people want to connect. They want to figure out how to be more engaged. They're trying to balance lives right now with all their responsibilities, but there is a strong drive to and urge to connect with each other.
Yeah. I like the word demystify too, because I think that there is this belief that everything has to be done a certain way, and right. and that you cannot deviate from a path that was developed, you know, maybe 100 years ago. But there are so many different ways that you can approach being a leader or just being involved in those decisions. Because I think that that's one aspect that I really appreciate about your organization. It's not that you have to have this drive to be a leader. It's mm-hmm. that you want to connect, or that you want to see things improve for where you are at. And you can just develop those relationships without necessarily running for office or wanting to be the president of a company.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, and that hopefully that's something that we communicate well, because it is, I look at it that way. It's like, well, yeah, not everybody wants to run for office. But as I said earlier, it's like, maybe you know somebody who wants to. And how can you help them? And what are those other areas that appointed positions that people aren't even aware of that I really need opportunities to serve on boards and commissions? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, corporate boards where you get paid to serve on a board. That's just like a whole mystery. So it's like, where are those places where women are sorely underrepresented? And I'll just give a quick example, and I'm sorry to keep going back to elected office, but it's top brain today.
No, that's
but
just
with
fine.
County commissioners, when you think about county commissioners, 87 counties, it depends on the county, but in most of our rural counties, we have five commissioners. There's seven in the metro. And I'll tell you what, under 15%, I think we're at 14.5% of county commissioners are women. And the majority of those are in the metro and the suburbs. We do have a couple counties now that have a majority of women. We have a couple of rural counties, Cook, Sherburn, maybe one other. Otherwise, Ramsey and Hennepin now are women. But like where I live in Itasca County, there's no women on the county board. And the county board has a lot of impact on your life.
Yes, they do.
But you don't have to be on a county commission. They have committees. They have different ways that you can get engaged and have impact in your community. That's some of the work we're doing, is identifying what those other roles are and being able to share those out with rural women to see if that's something they're interested in learning more about or being a part of, and trying to figure out how, you know, how balance is a big thing, because we all have busy lives, and it's sort of like, how do you balance all that? And so it all depends on what your degree involvement is going to be. There's a lot of different ways to engage. So we're just trying to lift that up. And hey, there's a lot of great organizations out there that, you know, work to get people elected, work, you know, to get people to do different things. We're not here to develop tons of new initiatives and programs. We want to connect women with resources. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in doing something in the private sector, a philanthropic sector, maybe you want to start your own business, we want to help you connect with resources. Because the last thing we want to do is recreate the wheel and compete with someone. We want to find out, where are those networks that can help you wherever you want to go? So that's really what it's about, is figuring out, how do we best connect women to resources and to each other?
That's exciting. As you look at the current landscape, Teresa, what opportunities do you see for women, whether it's in direct leadership, elected leadership, or organizational positions? What are some of those opportunities that you see for women in sharing their connections, their leadership with others?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, a lot of opportunity, and I don't have the exact data here. I just reached out to a colleague of yours at the university actually to talk about this a little bit, but some of the initial data I've seen when we look at COVID and pre-COVID, the number of women who are starting their own businesses is dramatic in rural communities. And I think that's a place where women can grow and lead. And we have to help women find those resources and figure out where's that capital that can help me do that so I don't put my family in crazy debt and all those pieces. So I think that the private sector, I think there's a lot of opportunity. You know, we're really blessed in Minnesota. We have rural philanthropy. We have rural foundations. I think there's a lot of opportunity when you look at the philanthropy community, too, for women to be involved and lead and figure out how to, you know, support their communities. And on the elected side, there was an article in the paper 2 weeks ago, I believe, about all the women we're starting to lose in the legislature who were in leadership mm-hmm. after reapportionment, redistricting. Because a lot of women ended up with their male colleagues and they ended up such a small part of their district, their old district, that they knew they would not be competitive. So we're losing some key people. Julie Rosen, who's chair of the Finance Committee in the Senate, she's amazing, yeah. long-serving. Melissa Franson, she's a minority leader from Edina in the Senate. We're just losing a lot of incredible women. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in not only in the legislature, but in local office. There's a ton of opportunity. But I also think these commissions are just sort of an undersold and people aren't really aware. What's soil and water conservation? My God, that's an elected position. So it's really identifying that there's more opportunities for women to be engaged in their community. And some of them don't take, you know, an inordinate amount of time. They just take time to be involved and contribute. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for women to go into a variety of different leadership now. And one of the interesting things, which I know you and I have talked about too, Christy, is I think of women farmers and who farm with their husband and don't mm-hmm. see themselves as business people. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's sort of like, it's sort of redefining, what do you do and who are you? And my God, look what you do on that farm. Now, you might not be driving a tractor every day, but you're doing everything else. Well, those farms don't run without women. You know, it's just sort of some of those old adage, the way we've defined roles too, I think is an interesting thing. And I think on the ag side too, local foods, there's a lot of women leading some super cool and really impactful local foods initiatives in rural Minnesota also. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, there really are. I think that we both commiserated around the word just, that I'm just a farm wife, or I'm just using that before you described yourself as a woman and not recognizing all of the great things that you're doing and contributing. We talked about some of those opportunities that you see for women moving forward. What are some of the key challenges that we need to think about how we can either support women to overcome, or even some of those just systemic things that we need to be aware of or watch for in helping women to advance?
You know, it's really interesting when you say that, because one of the things that makes me really nervous about coming out of COVID is we need to take the good that came from COVID and, you know, that how it impacted our lives. And with some of the summer meetings we had this summer, the convenings we had this summer, we had an elected official, I believe she was a city council member, mom, little kids. And she was saying how it just changed her life when she was able to participate virtually as a city council member. And then the legislature came in and did a mandate that all local governments have to meet in person. She actually testified at a committee when the legislature was building this law to say that everybody had to meet in person. So I just hope that, you know, when you think systemically, we really need to think about how do they keep people out? We need to think about how we can bring people in. And with women, what we're hearing is they need flexibility. That's not just in public office, but that's in corporate life. That's working in a variety of ways. How can we be more flexible so we can balance our work better? And so I'm really hopeful. I'm nervous. I'm hopeful that coming out of COVID, that we can take, as I mentioned, some of the good that came out of COVID that really gave people more opportunity for more flexibility. And it also raised the issue too. It's like, whoa, we need to figure out broadband in rural. I mean, that is a utility. Everyone deserves broadband. And yes. And not just a connection, but actual speed so we can upload and download and participate. That is a hindrance for women, but people were willing to slog it through with our meetings, even though their internet was tough. You know, we tried to really be careful not to do a lot of use a lot of high-end video. People could call in if they needed to. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's a big piece, is that how do we maintain that flexibility and how do we make sure women can connect and that we do have broadband for their education, for families, for business, all the way around.
Such a great point. And that flexibility piece, I think it could help women. It could help so many other underrepresented groups.
Absolutely.
To be able to really engage and lead in their own way.
Right.
If we could just allow greater access to some of those systems that have been in place for so long.
Yeah, it really is. And it really has made me step back also to think about who are we as an organization and how are we going to best serve our customers? And that's been the beauty of doing these 100 meetings, because we're learning what does help, how can we serve? And, you know, I've worked home office for years. I've traveled. I've done all those pieces. But I really saw this as a person-to-person, in-person organization, and that's the way you build those relationships, in person. And, you know, we got to step up and realize that technology is a great way to communicate. And even with some traditional mentorship, I was talking to one of my board members. She said, you know, how great is it that I can be on a mentorship Zoom with somebody and I can be sitting in my pajamas and doing it. I can do that. We can be in our own homes and do some of this work that we would have had to drive to. Or I think that's the other thing with rural. It's sort of like, we all know, you know, how much time do you waste on the road? How much windshield time do you have getting to meetings, being there for a couple hours and driving back? You can be much more productive virtually. So we're really thinking about our business model and what is the best way for us to serve rural women. So it's an interesting time. I think it's always like, who's your customer and how can you best serve your customer?
I think it's recognizing that rural women are looking for something a little different.
Yes.
Because of the hours that it can take to get to and from one location. And the realist in me is going, how many loads of laundry could I do instead of making this drive? So absolutely thinking about that.
Absolutely.
So because connections are so important, I want to make sure that we are able to connect our listeners into as many things that you have coming up, Teresa, within 100 Rural Women as we can. So tell us what some of the up and coming things are that we should be going to your website to get registered for. You have a great newsletter that I would encourage everybody to go and get signed up for on the website. But what other fun events do you have coming up for us?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we were doing the 100 meetings. We did the first 50 that were really deep research of what are the barriers women face? How do they overcome them? What kind of supports do they need? And now the next 50 is we took four big themes that came out of that initial research. One is health and wellness. So we're starting out with wellness. So you can go on our website and this is all free. This is all free of charge. I keep meeting these incredible women who want to get engaged and help us, but we're going to do virtual yoga, and it's really more body and movement, so not your traditional yoga. We're doing that twice a week at 8 and 12 on Mondays and Tuesdays, and it's just 30 minutes out of your day. Take 30 minutes out of your day to focus on you. That's what we're really trying to do. And then Wednesdays and Thursdays, we just had our first one today. We're doing one on mindfulness, meditation, relaxation. Again, that's going to be at 8 a.m. and at 12 p.m. on Wednesday and Thursday. And that's 30 minutes also just to take some time to breathe, center. And we'll still be collecting information and collecting data and connecting women. But it's just sort of a neat way to take care of yourself and meet other women along the way. And then we also heard from people that networking was a piece, thematic networking. So we really went around, what were the big themes that came out around childcare, around civic engagement, around education, you know, where women are struggling to figure out how do I balance the technology and the kids and how do I do all those pieces? So we'll be doing each week a Monday afternoon meeting, which is just sort of open networking around a theme. This week it was parents with young children. How do you balance it all? And so that was really fun. And then we just bring you together and then we put you in breakout rooms and meet other women and just talk about where you're at and how you can share. And then our fourth category is mentorship. And people wanted to learn about, I mentioned earlier, leadership journeys. How did you navigate? How did you get where you are? Did you have a plan? You know, how did this work? So our first one will be Friday with Hara Charlier. She's a president of Central Lakes College, and she's had a great journey. And mm-hmm. she can share how, no, that wasn't a plan. And how do you become a college president? And what is that? So we'll be having women across sectors, across cultures, across careers, age, race, socioeconomic status, really trying to get a diverse group of women to present each week to really share their leadership journey. And the whole goal of that is we all have a path. And it's really fun to see that not everybody's path was planned from the time they were 10 years old. Some were, and they've done great. Other ones have just sort of, it's happened and you've had to adjust and go do something else. So that's really our mentorship piece, is really looking at that. We have webinars. We do monthly webinars. We're skipping one this month because, my gosh, we have 7 meetings a week right now. So we don't want to overwhelm people too much. But we have a book group that mm-hmm. I would highly encourage, that started during COVID. And that has been a gas. And the majority of us in that book group have never been in a book group because we could never commit to being in the same place, same time, and having our homework done. This is like, read the book. If you aren't finished, don't worry. Just come join mm-hmm. us for conversation. We do fiction one month, nonfiction the next. My board chair, who's amazing, she's been running book clubs for 20 years for the Women's Press. So she's really facilitates this. And I have met so many incredible women. We have a core group of women that always come in, and then every month, depending on the book or depending on people's schedules, we have new people come in and out. So that's really been fun. And then we will be doing a big webinar in May about Humphrey Projects. So I'm really excited about that. That's really going to be fun. Yeah. And so I'm really excited to learn about that. Those are probably our top biggest programs that we're working on right now. And then the beauty of these, when we finish these 100 meetings, it's really going to be for us to step back and say what worked, what didn't, what really interested women, and how do we build our programming and find the funding to support the work going forward in those areas. So it's an exciting time. It's busy. We are young women powered. The only way I made it through COVID was graduate students and interns. So I love it because they push me. They push me. They push me on technology. They push me on issues. They push me to think broader. And I have an incredible board. We have a 6-member board. 2 of our board members are over 50, I think 2 over 50, and then 4 of them are under 30. And it's a really good group of young women and older women, and at all different parts of their careers and different cultures. Everybody brings a different perspective to the table. So I'm really fortunate to have that board also. But yeah, young women are our future. So we got to start listening to them, is sort of the way I look at that too. Yeah, like it's that. A good piece.
And the events that I have been able to attend, everything is always just so well managed and organized. And congratulations on just putting together a really great organization and so many wonderful events that can bring women together to have conversations we don't normally get to have.
Right. No, I say this a lot, but I'm really grateful to be able to do this work. And I'm so honored to do this work. And I was fortunate in my family. I grew up with super strong women and rural women. And my grandmother, my grandmother and great grandmother from Butterfield. And my great grandmother was one of the first, she was the first woman on the school board in the early 1900s, you know, and I was able to have all these strong women in my life. And I just think that's something we all need. So I just feel so fortunate to have had that. And I'm at the stage in my career too, where I'm at the deep end of it. I want to figure out how can I give back. And what I've learned is everybody I meet at all stages of their careers and their lives, everybody wants to figure out how they can give back to each other. So that's the cool thing about this work. It just sort of renews my spirit and my faith in the human race doing this work. So it really, I have really benefited quite a bit from doing this work.
Oh, strong women. May we know them. May we raise them. May we be them, right?
That's right. That's right. I like it. I like yes. it. Wonderful.
All right, Teresa. Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining me for this podcast conversation, and really wish you the best of luck with 100 Rural Women going forward.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Christy. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening. Vital Connections on Air is brought to you by the Center for Community Vitality at the University of Minnesota Extension. If you enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a review in your favorite podcast feed. Vital Connections on Air is produced by Greg Seams with the skillful assistance of Elise Paxton, Jennifer Wagner-Harkonnen, and Elise Hawkins. You can find the resources mentioned in this episode and many more on our website, extension.umn.edu/community-development.